Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Dials McFlower. And yes, we are on an hour earlier. If you expected somebody else, I would have to raise my voice a couple octaves, I think, to be that person, or at least an octave. But the point is that that show, now, as I understand it, and I'm not always privy to what's going on, but that show is supposed to be on Tuesday evening, so look for it there if you don't know that already. And if you're coming in and expecting that, you might stick around and hear what this show is about, if you want. And for the rest of you, I hope you know that, yes, we're on for 2 hours tonight and from now on. So this gives us a lot more time to cover some of the most interesting, I think, of course I'm very biased, I guess, subjects that that some people might want to hear about. Tonight we're going to be talking about understanding God's plan, and this is a show, of course, about metaphysics and spirituality, science, yes, and sometimes other subjects as well. So it's a really, we'll say, a melding together of a number of different parts of what I consider to be a general cosmology, an understanding and an ontology, an understanding of how the universe works and an understanding of maybe how God works. Now, that's what our show's about tonight, understanding God's plan, so ontology really makes a lot of sense. Now, at this point, I want to make a statement, and that is that whatever I give out as my understanding of God's plan, of course, you know, it isn't from God's mouth to my ears, back to my mouth talking over the air. It is processed through my thinking processes, and it is part of what I can best come up with. It is not necessarily something that we received in the mail this morning to give out, because if we did, I would probably not just be talking over this station, but who knows if I received that kind of information. But I don't. That's not necessarily what this is about. I don't claim that, and I don't want you to think I do, that this information is coming from God or some other grand source or something like that. You have the opportunity, of course, to call in. The numbers are on the screen if you are watching and listening. Now, if you're on the phone, and I know a lot of you are, I will give out the U.S. number just in case you have to have a second phone handy or however you might want to make it work. 877-876-5227 in the U.S. There's also a Canadian number, but, you know, hey, one number is enough right now. Okay, so let me first define what I mean by understanding God's plan so that at least we're on the same page about what the show is supposed to be about. And that is that a plan is basically the premise that someone exists under in terms of how their thought, which I call spirit, because I call God's thought spirit. So what the spiritual part of existence is in terms of a rationale and a, we'll say, goal. There's some aspects of goal, especially in a physical universe like the one we exist in. And this plan has with it inclusive behind it, and we'll say even before it exists, a purpose. So first someone comes up with a purpose for something, and then they initiate a plan to accomplish that purpose. For those who are familiar with some of the things that I have talked about in the past, the purpose would be along the first part of God's mind, and also it would correspond to the first type of energy that is created in the universe. Some people call it ray energy. There's other kind of names to it. And then the plan, the execution of it, would include such things as being inclusive and consciousness and givingness and being, we'll say, unselfish and loving in general. The plan incorporates all of those elements that we would associate with the second part of our Creator's mind, and also would incorporate the completion with the purpose of the thought, the total thinking of God. Now today we're focusing on the second part of that thinking. How do you get the purpose done, we could say, without getting into the physical part of it? How do you get it done in your thought? How do you make it complete? How does it become inclusive and connected and conscious? Conscious beyond God itself. So part of the plan is for God to create consciousness that it exists soul and separate, if it chooses to, on its own, or can, on its own, grow to become a part of and even add to God's plan. That's part of God's plan. Okay? So all of that together kind of defines what I'm going to be talking about tonight. Now, if I just lost you in that last thing I said, that's okay, because we're going to be going over it. Because that's it. For some people who have never heard me talk before, or others who haven't really thought about it as much, that was a little complicated to make that jump. Okay. So let's discuss what the plan of God is and why. Because we're going to be conceptual in this. Why tells us something about our own thought process at the same time. It's a concept. It tells us what is the thing that we conceive as a formula in our mind to understand God's plan. So we're going to understand that part too. We're going to understand how we understand as well as everything else about God's plan. So understanding is even part of the definition. Let me continue on now. Some questions that I often have come up among other people, and I have myself in the beginning of my quest to be able to teach whatever I can teach today, had questions. And I think a big question that many people have about God, about what is the plan of God, is why are there seemingly contradictions to the religious teaching sometimes and to the logical, deductive kind of thinking that people may have about God, and what seems to be, unfortunately, what people observe and or experience. Let me give you an example. In most people's lives, they discover that things sometimes go very wrong for them. And they may go to church, they may pray to the God of their particular religion, or they may pray to just God, period. They may try in some ways to live what they consider to be a godly kind of life, and yet things sometimes don't go very well in their life. That seems contradictory, somewhat even negatively postured against what might be a plan that God might have. Because why would God have a plan that causes people to sometimes suffer, sometimes to be hurt, sometimes to be destroyed, or things that are close to them follow that? Why is that the case? And if you go back to Hegel and other philosophers and all kinds of people, you start getting into the question, if God is all good and all powerful, then how come there's evil? Well, let's start from the very beginning, because there must be a reason, a conceptual reason, that we can understand. Because we are meant to understand God's plan. I'll get into that a little later. But we're meant to understand it. We are created to understand it. So we aren't barking up a tree we can't climb. We definitely can understand this issue. But why are we confused? Well, because we don't understand some parts of God's plan, or many parts. And that causes us to have the conflicts in our own mind. To start with, God needs, in its own mind, this is its purpose, to have a system that perpetuates its nature. But in that perpetuation of nature, one of the things that God is a free thinking being. And so it seeks to create life that ultimately can think freely within itself, and therefore emulates its creator. Now you can say, well, oh yeah, that's cool. I can follow that. That kind of makes sense. But then there's a problem. And here's the problem. The problem is that if you have a system that gives freedom of thought and eventually freedom to some extent of action, we'll get to action later too. If you have this system, which sounds wonderful, then you have also a, we'll call it paradox. Paradox is where two things both seem miserable, but you put them together and they don't seem to support each other because you're missing the bigger picture. And so that's what really happens in people's minds. They end up with this paradox. And here is God's, my understanding of God's plan and God's understanding of it. God is seeking to give freedom to those things that can use freedom, but not to necessarily make the universe chaotic. God is seeking to give love, but not to prevent growth and self-development, and again, in its purpose, the freedom to think. So, how does God function? And this really becomes the important issue. This is the answer, if you're ready, okay? I'm getting to it early in the show before people get too tired, because some of this stuff is big, okay? Here's the answer. The answer is that God's solution, in my opinion, but if you come up with a better one, please let me know. God's solution to this quandary, in at least as I've tried to build it so far, I haven't really expressed the whole quandary yet, but given a little piece of it, is to do the following. For those things that can think well enough to understand God, and that starts with mostly humans, by the way, and souls. All kinds of souls can, but humans in terms of physically alive things. Then you've got this need, we'll say, for those things that can understand God to choose to want to understand God. They've got to choose to want to, and then they've got to try through various means, including some things that are included in religions and philosophies about God, etc., choose to gain an understanding of God for the purpose of emulating the goodness of God. To emulate the goodness, which means the part of the plan of God that they may fall into, because goodness falls onto the second part of God's mind, which has to do with the part of the plan. So if a person does that, bingo, God does the following. This is the recipe. God says, oh, I have a sense of this human or soul and or soul who is seeking to understand my plan and to emulate in its life some element of my plan. Since this is what is happening, I, through my choices, choose to be of some value and help in encouraging that plan. If you want to call that miraculous, or if you want to call that beyond the explainable, that's fine. If you want to say, well, how do you prove that? I'll get to that part, because there is proof of this. But that's the way God chooses to function. However, God, he has another side. God says that which does the opposite of what I just described, and I'm going to say that opposite for you so you understand it, that does the opposite I will do nothing to, but I will not, and I will not help. So God does not come in and bang you on the head and say, you've been bad today, I'm striking you with a bolt of lightning. Now, I know there are many people who believe that part. I believe that is a construction of men and not of God. I do not believe that's part of God's plan, and I'll go into explanations about that as well. We got a lot of time, so I don't want to go too fast and overwhelm you. This is what I'm talking about right now is definitely, for some people, pushing the limits, and I don't want to get to the point where nobody understands what I'm saying. So, okay, here we go. What are those negatives? What is the negative of what what gets the help of God? Okay, what? How do you get God's help? You know, because a lot of people have asked this question, and there's a lot of things that are contradictory to the to my answers in some religious teachings, and especially in the way that they're taught today. Okay, so we have this paradigm, this example set up that I gave you about how I believe God functions. When you are functioning, when I am functioning, within God's plan. But if we function away from God's plan, God doesn't come and get you. I know that some of you believe that. What happens is this. First of all, let's take the negative. The negative is that person or those people who may go through the motions in a sort of hypocritical way of pretending to other people that they are following God or God's plan. But the most important element or elements are missing. They do not try to understand God. And more importantly, whatever they do or don't understand about God, they do not execute any complementary, any, we'll say, closely aligned thoughts and behaviors that contribute to the goodness of God. They just don't. They're not virtuous in their functioning is another way to look at it. Okay, so those people now, regardless if they go to church every day and they pray and they do all kinds of stuff, they aren't doing this important element, these important elements, and God says, oh, that's someone who right now doesn't get much, if any, help. Now, there's some exceptions. That's the reason I say much. There's sometimes exceptions. But doesn't most of the time that person or that people or whoever it might be is now excluded from service, help from God in any direct fashion. They're still part of the universe, and they enjoy collectively karma that they may be in a distant way associated with from others. So everything isn't only based upon the individual. But I want you to be aware that this plan that I'm telling you about is very individually determined. There are collective and group elements that come up. But this is important to realize because this has a lot to do with freedom. In order for God to have each individual be free, each individual has to stand on their own in terms of its own plan. And that's the problem. You can't have it every other which way. You can't say, well, it's a collective good and it's all about how people are working collectively together. No, it's not. This is really an individual thing. And the religions that get that part of it right have been the ones that have survived throughout time. There have been many religions that have not had that element in them. And they have not survived. So if we look at Christianity, I'm going to just use this as an example. I like examples, and I like giving them, and we have the time tonight to use them. So that's the really good news. If we look at the example of Christianity, is Christianity based upon the common good? Like God rewards a city for doing good things? Or does God reward and help, I should use the word reward, I think that's probably a wrong word. Does God assist the individuals who choose to do good to further do more good? And the second is mostly correct. Remember, there's some exceptions to this. There are circumstances where collective good comes into play. Let's say that a whole city of people suddenly respond to a terrible epidemic of some disease. And as a collective city, they fight and win this battle over the disease. That does get rewarded, in a sense, or I don't like that word, I keep using it, that does get the help of God in overcoming, in some miraculous ways, the problem itself. And the collective good is served. But it has to be something that really, really stands out as a collective action. Those are rare in present-day humanity on Earth. They're not for other places, but they are rare here. So for the most part, what we're looking at is individuality as being the key element here in terms of practicing and creating and co-creating with God virtue. And so most people who don't like that idea, who are really against, we'll say, individuality, do not have a viewpoint of God that's consistent with most religions today, and they don't have a viewpoint of God which is correct, in my opinion, as I'm expressing it on this program. They are working on the wrong side. They may still believe themselves to, in some way, have some connection to God. But I think they're grossly in error. Grossly. Okay, so I hope those examples are being of some assistance tonight, because this is, again, I chose a subject that would challenge people, but with our time and the ability to give examples, it will help, I think, for people to understand this a bit better. So starting off with the very basics of God's plan, at least as basic as I can make them, okay, at the very outset, one of the biggest paradoxes and problems that people have is really revealed by understanding what God is facing in trying to have a universe of free beings that experience its own experience of being a free being. And if we were to reverse the situation and make it that God is this wonderful God who takes care of everyone and helps everyone in some way, regardless how good or bad or whatever indifferent they are, then you've got a real bad problem, because you don't have a method of creating freedom. You have a method only of destroying freedom. Freedom is destroyed where equality of people is used to undistinguish virtue or to remove individual virtual exercise. This is true whether it's in religion, whether it's in government. You know, I've talked about socialism. And so that's one of the problems, socialism. Socialism is the opposite of God's plan. It ultimately is going to reduce and eventually destroy freedom. And freedom has to exist before all else. It's the first part of God's mind for a reason. Because without freedom, you have a puppet show. You don't have real life growing itself, becoming something unique, and helping God to become more and more different and grow. I know most people say, well, how could God grow? Well, God can grow just like everything else, because if it didn't, its own existence would be meaningless. And no God would want its existence to be meaningless, I can assure you. Meaning comes from co-creating with God. A meaningless existence is developed by destroying freedom, in be it a political system, an economic system, or a religious system, and making all people the same. But by doing so, you've eliminated the ability for people to co-create with God. If you eliminate freedom, you eliminate creation. And creation and freedom are all part of the first part of God's mind, and absolutely necessary. or there would be no reason for any of us to be here, including God. So God would never make that kind of decision. Now, you might say, well, who does make that kind of decision? Well, those who have turned away from God, and the further they turn away, the more we call them dark, and eventually they become evil. When you reach that point, your life becomes meaningless, other than the meaning that you get from a thing called power, which is to limit and control the interactions of others, and to some extent to try to control the thought of others, which is a substitute for theory, for spirit. So evil seeks to gain power while it substitutes its thought for spirit, which is God's thought. Another way to say it is while it tries to eliminate the thought of God. It weirdly believes that God must exist because it's trying to eliminate it, but it may deny that except to itself. All right, so we have this system in place, which begins with this really beautiful idea. And the beautiful idea is that we are all part of God, helping God to grow. We're all enjoying that process if we choose to participate in it, and we all have the capability of eventually being gods ourselves. It's a very, 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 very distant point from where we are right now. Human beings are pretty far away from that. But they have the potential, maybe almost a guarantee, that they will eventually reach that. That doesn't mean they replace the God in this existence, because that God grows from the complexity of all the life it creates. So there's no way to catch our God, so to speak, catch up and say, I'll exceed our God. Now, while we grow, it grows. So there's no way you're going to just say, I think I'll become bigger than God, stronger than God. You can't. It's not possible. But by being a part of God, life becomes incredibly meaningful because of the great amount of creation and the tremendous amount of inclusiveness, real love. Not the fake love, not the hypocritical love. I tell you about real love, where your thought for others is far greater than your thought for yourself, where your willingness to give is far greater to others than anything you seek for yourself. That's real love, and that means, and that builds this kind of inclusiveness where you and the boundary of others cease to exist, and now you enjoy all the enjoyment of all others, which is reaches a state of what is called bliss. And life takes on a totally different experience. Wow. I know I jumped ahead. It's okay. Sometimes I diverge and go off in directions and whatever. Okay. Let's get back to God's plan. So I think we've dealt to some extent with the biggest and most, one of the biggest and most difficult questions. You know, and really gets to the question, if God is all-powerful and God is all-good, then how come there's evil? Well, now we just discovered why there's evil. There's evil because people have freedom of choice, and they have to in order to be creative, so their life is meaningful, and so they can contribute to the growth of themselves and God, and they can be independent life, ultimately. Now, you might ask, well, what about all the life before human beings? Well, there's souls that are going through the same process that humans are, as a life form. The souls aren't really in form, so they have lots of life forms that play out parts of their thought processes. They're not maybe as advanced in consciousness as humans, but they're pretty advanced. And they're definitely more advanced than the forms of life that they inhabit, because sometimes they inform elements or minerals. We wouldn't even call that life, pre-life. But nonetheless, they're experiencing a similar effect on their own level. When you get to be human, the good news is that you have true individual self consciousness. It doesn't come from your soul. The soul does, our souls do, have great consciousness greater than our own. But we are independently conscious of ourselves and conscious of God and conscious of, if we choose to, of our souls. That's a wonderful part of it. Okay, so we covered the first part of this dilemma, which is the creativity issue. But what about the rest of God's plan? I mean, there's a lot more to it than just this very, very beginning notion. It gets incredibly complex. Will we be able to cover everything about it? No, because I don't know everything about it. And even if I did, I couldn't do it in a 2-hour show. Maybe I could do it in a 2-million-hour show or something. I don't know if I did know everything. But let me continue on. The next element, the next part of God's plan is to be able to develop the true meaning of love inside of ourselves. And that's by understanding God's love. Now, you can only understand God's love if you understand the first thing I told you about God in general, and you recognize that you and God are on a common mission. Now, what is that mission? Because if you get the mission, then you understand the love of God, and then that's another big piece in God's plan. The mission is to enhance life beyond the form that it exists within yourself. God doesn't seek to grow from its form of life, if it has any. It seeks to grow from the multiple form of all other life, as much as was willing to participate in its plan. We have to adopt that process. How many people do that? Not too many. Most of them are called spiritually disciplined people, but even among them, some of them don't do it well enough. It vows a tremendous change in consciousness. Tremendous. It happens through something called the second level of initiation. I know, that's one of those funny words. It sounds goofy. But it happens during a certain period of developmental time in a human being's, of many, many lifetimes of a human being, during the latter part of its existence. That means the last lifetimes or so. Humans can take on this new kind of love. It's not love like you would love a friend, a child, a pet, even an object. It's love about helping others as life to grow. It's love about wanting that more than wanting anything for yourself. And there's a direct competing mechanism within us. It's called the personality versus the self. And this conflict rages in some people during certain lifetimes. When it does, it's a big problem for them and maybe for others. To solve the equation of the problem is not that difficult in terms of I'm going to explain it to you, but to actually do it is very, very hard and requires constant daily vigilance. Okay, what is the equation? What is the formula for making this thing work so that you really love others more than you do yourself? Not as much or less, but it has to be more. Okay, and the formula is basically this. For each amount that you love someone else, you have to love yourself twice as less. Now you could say, wait a second, I thought self-love is everything. I've written all these self-help books and it says, love yourself and you'll be happy. They're talking about liking. They're talking about feeling good about yourself. That's a different thing entirely. Love is giving. Giving. And loving others in a way that helps them to grow more as a life being is helping them to love others, helping them to be more giving. That's the real measure here. Why does it take twice as much from you to do that than just giving it to them in some way? Because you're not just concerned about giving them something. That's the one time. But the twice as much is the wisdom of it is to help them to become more giving themselves. So you don't just give the people because they're starving or cold or this or that. You give to those that, in whatever way you're giving to them, by feeding them or giving them clothing, et cetera, you can determine by your empathy and a thing called super empathy, by your understanding of God itself and the plan of God and acting as an emissary of God, how to help that person, which may not really be that much help to them in their viewpoint, to become more giving themselves. That's what real love is about. And that's why it's not about giving to yourself, because then it would be circular and contradictory. Every time you gave to yourself, you become more selfish, you see. This is giving to others so they're focused out. You can't give to yourself so you're focused out, because you're already focused in if you're giving to yourself. And if that's all you're concerned about is, what am I getting out of this? So any time you're thinking about what's in it for me, you're not in the equation. You're not part of the equation. If you say, well, maybe something's in it for me and something's in it for somebody else, now you're still not in the equation, but you're functioning somewhat giving towards others, but not really wisely giving, because you aren't fully focused out. Because if you're fully focused out, you'd only be concerned with how you can help them to become more giving, and you wouldn't be concerned about whether you're getting something out of it. Only about whether they are learning to become more giving. Whether they are participating in it. Whether they are functioning as a co-creator with God. That's the part of the plan. That's the big part. And that's kind of really neat. Because that part of the plan allows us to enter into what is known as soul consciousness. Human souls already know what I just told you, right from the get-go. They don't have to go through hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes, as we do, to get that. Because they don't live in a sphere of time and space that prevents them from understanding it. We do. That's why they don't come here. They create us, and they say, well, go forth, my person, and live in the depths of illusion and overcome the illusion to discover God and this great part of the equation of the plan, which is to give to others so that they can become more giving, which takes incredible wisdom. Incredible understanding overall, consciousness, and literally understanding what their sense of God is. That's why it's called super empathy. When you understand empathically something, you understand how they feel about things in their life, maybe even people in their life. But when you understand how they understand about God, you now understand using your heart and crown chakra about them. That's a super empathy. The first empathy comes from the five lower chakras or understandings that come from information of those chakras, whereas this comes from the highest level of information that we could only get through our heart and our crown chakras, which tells us whether that person's functioning as God. That's how it works. It's truly amazing. And this part of God's plan is even more difficult for some people to get than the first part I explained. So, because the first part I explained can be gotten by some people through what is called the first initiation. It doesn't culminate, though, and it isn't perfectly clear until you get the second part in the second initiation. Join them together in a thing called the third initiation and go through a thing called renunciations where it's tested, and then you've got it. We'll talk more about that when I come back. And I want you to realize at this point that everyone is destined, who's hearing me, to eventually go through this. So this is no small issue. This isn't for a few million or thousands or whatever people who might presently be spiritually disciplining themselves. This is for everybody, in my opinion, and maybe in yours now, too. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll say continue this discussion and have more information for you. So we'll be back in now, give or take, about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about understanding God's plan. And it's a two-hour show, and it will remain 2 hours from now on. And it will give us an opportunity to use more examples. I'll be able to take things a little bit more slowly. I know from some of you that it's difficult to absorb all the concepts that one of these shows, when we were doing the hour-and-a-half shows, even and there wasn't enough, still not enough time to give enough examples that makes it much easier to know, understand what I'm talking about. So we ended the show recognizing that when we combine these first two elements, these first two parts of what I consider the most important parts of God's plan, we elevate ourselves if we start doing this on a regular basis, and I'll talk about doing next, but when we start doing this on a regular basis every day, we elevate ourselves into a part of our soul where we're more soul, as much or more soul than we are human. That's a big step, and it's possible for people, human beings, to do this. As a matter of fact, everybody eventually will do this. Everyone. Now, they'll either do it by a process called initiation spiritual discipline, or they'll gradually move into that in a much more slow process, maybe not even here on Earth. But on Earth, right now, we've got this real accelerated quote-unquote process, which only takes 700-800 lifetimes, give or take. And again, those are averages. So for a lot of people, it seems like it's forever, but it isn't necessarily. And I'll tell you something else. Anybody who's listening to the show with any kind of interest, is most likely more towards the end than the beginning of that process. So it's sort of self-selective. Otherwise, I sound like I'm a kook. Or worse, just boring and you're not interested. So if you find some kind of interest in what I'm saying, it's a good sign, I think, in my opinion. Again, it's just my opinion. So let's go on to the third part of God's plan, which involves interactions. And we both have been talking about how you think, but also we did talk about, you know, giving, but giving still isn't necessarily clear in the interactional part. What is the third part of God's mind? Third part of God's mind has to do with growth through giving and receiving. Okay, so the third part of God's plan, first two parts was purpose. We got the purpose going and meaning, creativity, freedom, all that stuff. Second part is inclusiveness, giving so that others can become more giving. So you develop the love wisdom part. The love becomes a more mature kind of love. And you're really on your way. It's terrific. But there's a third part. And the third part gets even more difficult in the physical world where we all are living right now. And that is to enact the second part in kind of like a dance. Remember I said this is done on an individual level. That's absolutely true. Until you reach the third part. The third part is interactional. Meaning that while you're giving to others to help them to better give, they're doing it back to you. And you're doing this on a conscious level where you understand what it is you're doing. That is critical. Once you reach that point, now you're going from a few seconds of joy a day to many hours possibly and eventually bliss. Your life takes on an even greater meaning. Your closeness to God grows enormously, and you're probably functioning within some kind of group of people. I call them spiritual groups, but they may not. Some groups that are very spiritual don't necessarily consider that their name because they're functioning outside of a consciousness development sphere or a religious development sphere in one of the other five ways that groups can function. And those groups do not necessarily have to understand that they're going through the very process I'm going to be explaining to you. And what is that process? That process is a feedback with God, too. Remember this that I told you, well, you're giving and they're giving back to you. That's great. That's being part of maybe a spiritual group. But it goes deeper than that. Once the group reaches a certain level, and what is that level? It has to do with the thing called the 60% rule. But it doesn't. Once they do it over half the time throughout the day, together, all of them, it's dependent upon everybody who's present that can do it, doing it. So everybody has to respond this way. One person can ruin the whole process. Certainly a couple for sure will put the kibosh on it. And this process leads to the following next step. This is going to excite you, I think. And that is that God starts to participate in it. And he goes, oh, boy, this guy's, he just went off the deep end. Okay, that's it. God's participating. Right, sure. No, I'm telling you it as it really is. God begins to participate in the process. Remember, this, and it takes three or more people to make this work. But if there are more than three, it takes everybody being on board with it. So don't say, well, we got everybody except for Sue and Sam. No, that doesn't work. Everybody that's in it got to do it. It's not like, well, I'll do it maybe today and someone else does it tomorrow. No, it's everybody's on board. Just so you understand, because I don't want to promise you something that won't work if you don't do it the way it has to be done. Okay. All right. But what I am promising you is that if you do this, the results will be the following. Every step of the way in the interactional process with yourself and others inside and outside of your team of people will be miraculous. every step there'll be help coming from God. Now, from God may mean any being that is beyond human or beyond where you are as a human, who can contribute and help will. That's it. And there's a lot of beings out there that fill that. Now, there are some restrictions and some exceptions. In general, if these beings are not God itself, then they are generally associated with and connected to the planet that you live on. Well, that's not a problem. We're living on here on Earth, so those beings connected to or associated with Earth are going to help. That's cool. There's enough of them, believe me, and they can help us. There aren't a lot right now, but there's enough because of their great abilities to be of assistance and because of the relatively small number of humans presently doing it. And as the greater numbers of humans do it, there'll be more of the ones greater than us to help. So it's always equal. It always works out. What do they do? What is involved when you get help from God and or God's helpers in the process of developing virtue in our interactions? Well, if someone we are serving as a group needs help beyond the interaction that they are choosing to have, God and or helpers of God can intervene by things that they think are strictly coincidence for them to have greater involvement with those who are going to be assisting them within the spiritual group or groups that they're coming into contact with. They may even think some kind of miracle may have happened. And it did. Every one of these things that I'm describing are real miracles because they fall outside of the ability for any person or group of people to do themselves. I don't care if it's curing an incurable disease or if it's living through a disaster of amazingly destructive factors and you survive. Those are kind of the negative things. Or if it's doing some feat or creating some kind of thing that is beyond, way beyond the capabilities of the people involved in the creation, yet they get it done anyway. So all kinds of impossible, by human standards, things are accomplished through this great gift given to us by God, provided that we can function together. So there's the collective side. That was the exception that I mentioned earlier. But that collective side can only function in a circumstance in which everybody individually is already functioning as a co-creator with God and functioning virtuously. It can't function if one or more people, that's a very small intolerance really, aren't. And if you have a large number of people aren't, then you have a system that goes the opposite way, becomes corrupt, destructive, abusive, destroys freedom, tyrannical. These are the kinds of terrible things that can happen. So in order to stay on the right track, you need people to participate. That makes sense. It gets very difficult, though, when you get even three people. Imagine if you have 10, 12. The more people, the more difficult it is to do, but the more the net results are phenomenal. That's how it works. So in God's plan, there is a collective, but the collective still comes from the individual. And the lower the individual element controls, the greater. This is a bitter pill for some people, particularly if you're a communist, because you would realize that you can't ever succeed in a system that uses that relative relatively, we'll call it ignorant understanding or misunderstanding of God. Of course, true communists say God doesn't exist because they recognize the contradiction in themselves, even if they can't state it. And if God does exist, their system is no good. It's a bad system. We have kind of a meter inside of us that tells us, if we really listen, about some of the truths I'm telling you tonight. And when you really go away from it, you can feel it. And you know that it's wrong. So this is an interesting, very interesting concept here. The things that really are against God, we virtually know those things without having to be told them. But unfortunately, many people choose to ignore them because they're selfish and because they're an illusion. Okay, so let's move on to another really interesting part of God's plan. God's ultimate plan, you could say, for humanity on Earth, particularly, since that's where we are located, is that we not just become more godly, but we also fight evil. Now, that sounds a little strange. I know a lot of people who are pacifists, etc., don't necessarily believe that. But I'm going to explain to you why that's a true statement, even though you may in the past not believe it, and you may still not want to believe what I'm telling you today. That's okay. We can disagree. Why would God want us to fight against and destroy evil? What does it mean to destroy evil? Does that mean you go around and chop people's heads off that we call evil? No. It doesn't necessarily mean that, unless that's the only way to prevent them from chopping your head off. Evil is a negation of God more than it is its own thing. So the reason you want to destroy negation of God is because God is the thing that created all life. And if evil is a negation of God, then evil is a negation of life as well. It's anti-life. And anything that tries to destroy life and seeks it as a planned event, we could claim is evil. So to make it simple, there are other ways to define evil, but I like that one. That's a real good one. And destroying life does not mean only by physical force. It can be by destroying freedom, destroying love, destroying interactions that have intelligence in them. Because those are all parts of God. And without those parts, life diminishes and eventually fails. So there's lots of ways to get rid of life that doesn't necessarily mean destruction of form. But evil uses destruction of form, particularly in the dimension we're living in, because many people have a fear of it. And when they fear something that evil could use power over to control, then evil can convince people to turn away from God through their fears. And that's unfortunate. Evil uses a system of thought that is fully corrupting of God's thought. It isn't just a question of coming up with something that's just the reverse of doing good. It also seeks to corrupt the ability to do good in the future. Let me give you an example. This is something I'm involved in. I can't name names and can't tell you too much about it. But there's a group of evil people who are trying to destroy the spiritual group I'm part of. They don't even know necessarily that that's their true motive, but that's what they're trying to do. Some of them do, and some of them don't. But the point is that they collectively work to not only prevent us, us, our motives, our creations, etc., from becoming a fruition and interactively intelligent with others. They not only do that, they do something even more damaging. They corrupt the process of good. They seek out ways to prevent there being things like justice and fairness and the expression of caring and love and interaction between a whole bunch, many, many, many other people that aren't necessarily evil but are affected in fear, for the most part, of these people's power. And they use that as a weapon against us and some others. So you can claim that the real element of evil is not just reversing God's thought. There is some creative element to it, and that's called corruption. It's corruption of a political system, corruption of a court, corruption of an economic environment, corruption of a physical thing or environment, such as burning down and destroying things. That's a corruption in itself, too. The destruction of physical things we think of as just being the physical thing. But the real corruption is if those things were going to be used for goodness, and you choose to destroy only the things that are going to be used for goodness, not just things wantonly, then you have a real evil process. And you know that it's evil when, by that old criteria, the destruction is aimed at those events. That's how you know you're dealing with evil, too, because that's how it works. It isn't randomly and chaotically destroying things. I know there's some texts that say that. That's not true, in my opinion. Evil has more intelligence than that. It doesn't work on chaos. It may develop some levels of it, but it actually has a plan, if you want to call it that, to get people to turn away from God by destroying their ability to co-create with God. And it works from the physical level up. It works physically. It works electromagnetically and etherically, so your senses don't work properly. And then it works emotionally, so that you become discouraged, possibly hostile and angry, definitely fearful. And then it works mentally. How does it work mentally? By a thing called propaganda. This is more new to evil on Earth, because humans have just started to develop their minds in the last 1,000 years or so to the point where propaganda makes sense and works. It wasn't too effective if you go back thousands and thousands of years ago. It was of minimal effectiveness. You have to have large elements of mass communication that you can use at your disposal. And you have to have people thinking well enough to believe in false ideologies. And then you can use propaganda effectively. It's been mostly used effectively in the last 100 to 200 years. Okay, so when we're talking about corruption mentally, we're talking about not just preventing people from speaking the truth, which is certainly part of it, but it's even more important that you create false truths about those who might speak the truth. You slander, you obscure, you create new ways that others might look at those people that aren't true, so that their thoughts cannot become useful, because that's part of God. Truth is part of God. And if you eliminate the truth through propaganda, lies, some people just might call it lying a lot, but it's lies with a specific purpose and a more long-term plan. That's very evil. Evil today on Earth has reached this level, and it's a more dangerous level than just dealing with people in an emotional sense by power and fear. Now we're talking about a new, more damaging way for evil to be effective against God. Remember, the truth is what eventually gets rid of that evil, the truth. Okay, so if we're looking at how does the dark side, how does the evil work, it works by this process of first reversing God and then using what creative tools it has, which are very limited because it's difficult for it to create against God, but it can do it. It uses these to ultimately to stop the growth of life and eventually destroy life. Life collapses on itself when it cannot be free, when it cannot be loving in ways that are wise and inclusive, and when it can't intelligently communicate with others and interact with others in ways that helps life to further grow and prosper. So if all of those things are prevented, you have a very evil system going on, a very dangerous one. God's plan is that this system cannot ultimately succeed. Now we go to the next part of God's plan. The dice are loaded. Let me explain. Everything I told you sounds scary, and here on Earth, evil is winning at the present time. But it's not going to win forever. And even if it did in this world, then the world itself would destroy itself. But in the universe, God's plan uses fixed dice. And that is this. Evil is self-destructive as well as destructive to life because evil is part of life. Evil can never destroy all of life in the universe before it wipes itself out long before. So, in God's plan, God knows that evil eventually will exist, but it also knows that evil has a limitation on itself as far as how far it can grow and to what level of power and corruption it will develop. It can't go beyond that because since it's part of life itself, it destroys itself as it destroys life. It is self-limited. And it's also limited by things called time and space. The reason the physical world has such limitations in time and space, particularly at the present time, and why we don't even have free travel very easily to other dimensions of time and space, is because God made the universe that way so that evil is confined. The confinement of evil, even just to the physical dimension, causes evil to eventually destroy itself, just the way it does also to itself, mostly in the astral world, where it confines itself, thinking that it gains power, which it does, over those closest to it in consciousness, but still not evil. It gains a lot of power by doing that, by isolating itself. But because it isolates itself, it's very much affected by its own destruction of life, and it eventually will destroy itself long before all the rest of life, say in the astral world, is destroyed. But do realize that as far as the physical world is concerned, it is possible on Earth at this time, because of an experiment that's being done, that Earth could destroy itself. Evil could destroy the Earth before it actually destroys itself. It'll go with the Earth. When both go, we'll go at the same time at that point. Evil will never get ahead of the game. But on Earth, the experiment is being allowed to go to the point of extremes, unlike the rest of the whole universe, where it could never get to that level. Certain planets are chosen to allow this to go to the maximum level. The maximum level is really level of life that is destroyed equals the level of evil that is destroyed, and the two go in a fiery burst at one time, and they're gone. That's the worst that could happen. And it could happen on Earth in the next couple hundred years. We're in danger. We're in great danger that this might happen. But it's an experiment because Earth and the beings beyond human that are associated with Earth are trying as hard as possible to overcome the new type of evil that is really taking place only in small parts of the universe, which includes Earth, right now, the physical universe. And this part deals with mental, some people call it monastic, thinking. It deals with that part of thought. And consequently, that part that is the worst is being allowed to develop itself on Earth to see if we can overcome it with new methods that have yet to be developed anywhere in the universe. These new methods would then be brought to other worlds and used there. It's a great solution. Now, are we going to achieve this? I don't know. I really don't. Do I know that we're doing it? I know myself we are, but I may have not convinced you of that. That's okay. I'm just telling you what I understand. This is about my understanding. All right, so the process with God is God permits there to be evil because there's no choice. God does not seek there to be evil, doesn't want there to be evil, but there's no choice because you can't have all the other things, including freedom, without there eventually being some evil. That's just the way it works. And the dice are stacked because evil cannot take over the universe, but it can take over a planet, maybe a series of planets. Who knows, maybe a couple stars. I don't know. That's very difficult for evil to accomplish. But generally, a planet or two, definitely possible. So it's something to be concerned about. But it isn't the ultimate end-all. The whole universe isn't going to collapse if Earth becomes evil. It's just not a good thing. And hopefully we can stop it. I'm doing this show partly for that reason. I'm also fighting evil in other ways, partly for that reason. Because I don't want to see this world become evil. I want to say and know that I contributed with the others that I'm working with. Together, we all want to say that we stopped evil. And that we did something to be of great help in this system. We understand that out of this will come a greater understanding of how to generalize the process. So it's a learning experience for us. We're not following like the book of fighting evil, you know, do A, B, C, D. No, we don't follow that because there's no such thing. We are the creators to come up with how to deal with it. And that's part of the plan. Part of the plan is it's self-discovery, self-creation. Not, you don't get tablets from Moses and say, do these 10 things and you'll be over. You'll be okay. And you might say, well, wait, are you saying that Moses didn't do a good thing by being the lawgiver with the 10 things and then the other parts of the Torah, which is a long, much longer series of explanations? No, I'm not saying that. For his time, 3,000 years ago, that made a lot of sense. That made a lot of sense because the people he was dealing with needed a codified method. They couldn't think, and they didn't have to worry so much about propaganda in those days. They couldn't think well enough to implement what we're working on today. They needed codified rules, and so they got them. And they may have used them to be of some help. They won't help today. We think way beyond those. But that doesn't mean that if you're a devout Jew and you follow some of these principles and rules, that you're doing something wrong. You're not, necessarily. But, and, you could do more. It's up to you. All right, let's get to the next part of God's plan. One of the things that is really important to recognize about God as a creator is that it doesn't contain the illusions in itself that we have. A lot of people attribute, they kind of anthropomorphize God as like a some kind of human-like being, you know, sort of like the Greeks did and stuff. And they have all these human-like traits. That's a misnomer. the parts of the universe that humans struggle with, particularly the emotional and the physical worlds, those parts, it isn't that God doesn't understand those parts of the universe. God is giving us those parts of the universe for us to find new ways to grow life in. God says, here's a playground. It's a difficult one. It has lots of illusionary things. Illusions means it's difficult to gain a true sense of what's going on around us while we're physically alive. And God said, here's a great place that you can go that's so difficult to live in that most of the time you're going to be an illusion, but when you're not, you'll be able to create great new parts to life, which means new growth to God. And if it wasn't a struggle, there would be no challenge, and nothing new about God would be developed. So God is doing this to give us the opportunity to grow new things. Well, as you can imagine, anything that's new is going to be pretty difficult to create, which it is, and there might be some opposition to it, particularly from evil. And God is okay with that. But that doesn't mean that God struggles with those things. It's just that God chooses not to create those things on its own. It allows us to work in the sandbox of physical world to create the things ourselves instead of itself. It could create perfected whatever, but it would be God's perfection of life, not its creative life, creating new life itself. It's the reason we procreate. It's the reason we raise children. It's the reason we have pets. It's the reason we involve ourselves in every element of horticulture and beauty throughout all of the systems that we do in our civilizations. It's all of those things and much more, so that we can contribute to the growth of life ourselves, not because God can't do it. I hope that makes sense to you, because there's a number of religious elements that actually come from ancient beliefs in gods, etc., that are still part of religions today. They're kind of confused elements of it put in there to because they just seem to make sense at the time. That really create contradictions in thought and leave us kind of in a way of, well, that doesn't make much sense. You know, why doesn't God just make everything perfect and beautiful to begin with? We wouldn't have to worry about anything. Well, of course, we started the show with the answer to that, but it goes a lot deeper in that God could do it, chooses not to do it, so we have the opportunities. God gives us opportunities for growth by limiting itself. That's where we're headed to in this new part of God's plan. I mean, it's an old part of its plan, but it's new for the show right now. And so the amazing thing about this is, being from the perspective of God, is that it has to make itself much, much smaller in its abilities and everything else so that we have the opportunity to be a co-creator. I think that's wonderful. What an amazing thing. I hope all this is giving you chills, because it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. It's so remarkable that for most people, unless they've done a lot of thinking about it, it's like almost a revelation. Because it answers all those goofy questions. They're not goofy in the real sense, but they're the questions that people have about the inconsistencies in their religion, the inconsistencies about God, etc. It makes God consistent. It makes God a greater being than we ever expected it to be. Because the wisdom and amazing love of this being goes far beyond anything I've ever read about in any religion. I'm not saying that this should replace religions. I'm saying that this could be added to everybody's religion, regardless of which one it is, and that religion makes a lot more sense. That's my opinion. Okay, and what is this called? It's called Ageless Wisdom. In case you don't know the name of it, it's called Ageless Wisdom. It's been around a long time, before recorded history. Okay, so this is a great part to this great being's plan, is to create things that allow us to co-create without it getting involved deep into that process. Now you can say, oh, what about the first part of the show where you said God will help? Isn't that interfering? No, it's just the opposite. We take the lead. We have to create the circumstances where God comes in and does a miracle. But we take the lead. Miracles are not the instrument of God to the response of God to us from our endeavors of creating virtue. Hope that makes sense to you. Now, speaking about, I'm kind of going to kind of give us a break here. Speaking about some of the elements of what God created in the universe to help humanity, some of those things are natural life forms. We call them plants and herbs. And as far as the group I'm part of, one of the things we do, and we do a lot of different things that you might already know, is we create formulas using the science that we think of as the energies that God created to build the universe. And we know these to be part of everything, but they're part of plants and some herbs. And we use these to help balance the life energies that are part of all life forms. But particularly in people and some animals, this is an important thing to contribute. And we try to contribute in that way. We've been doing this for a number of years for ourselves. We go back in time. I think if we're only talking about ourselves, we've probably been doing it about 15 years. So, but recently, we decided, fairly recently, that we should start trying to do it and be helpful for others. So we started creating using a science of the many energies that flow through our bodies to correct where there's either too little or too much energy in a minor center that's connected to a major center or chakra. And this energy flows from meridians and a thing called the nadis system, those are new words, to bring health, a state of health, and to relieve discomfort and unhealth. We've been doing this with several different formulas. The name, which we got trademarked by the patent office, United States Patent Office, to do this whole science thing, is called Phi Chi, PHY-QI. Now, why QI? Because the word QI is pronounced Qi in Chinese, and it's very closely related to some of the Chinese science that was adopted 1 or 2,000 years ago. So we want to give them some credit for it, right? And then Phi has to do with phyto, which has to do with the chemical source of herbs. So there's some Western science about that, too, and understanding that process. But it's far more involved, really, in the Qi part. And we use this science in the creation of all the formulas that we have created. The thing that's neat about it is, and the reason I call it a science rather than just an art, there's maybe some art parts to it, but it's mostly science, is that you can work on paper and in your mind, create a formula, and then amazingly, it almost always works. Now, you can tweak it a little here and there, maybe make it work a little better, a little less, as you discover some things after you make it. But the point is that it works right almost right away. That's not usual, especially when we're talking about 60 to 200 herbs. You make a formula that complex, the chances of coming out successful are very, very low, actually, because the herbs can have bad effects on each other, and you can end up with nothing, or sometimes a lot of adverse effects. And yet our formulas do the opposite. They produce really good effects that are life-producing, life-creating, and helpful in solving a lot of problems people may have. The latest formula, and we actually made some at the beginning of this week, not very much, because we kind of got waylaid. We had a lot of other issues. Evil, again, is on against us, and we have to deal with that, too. But we made some, and I can tell you the newest formula is called Fai Chi Jizik. Yeah, it's about pain. But it doesn't just get rid of pain for the moment. It can actually solve what's behind the pain in the distant future, particularly if you use it anywhere more than one or two times. Even if you only use it one time, it gets rid of most or all of the pain that you might have. That's a big deal. And it does so using all natural herbs. That's right, uses herbs. Doesn't have any drugs in it. It has two nutraceuticals in it, which are commonly used, and they're used to, in a small way, balance out certain parts of it. But the nutraceuticals really don't get rid of the pain. Herbs do. There's 61, I believe, herbs in it. And it's a relatively low number. We try to keep it as low as possible so it's easier to make. And this formula gets rid of most of the pains that people have in most areas of their body. When I say gets rid of it on the short run, and if you use it for a while, those pains will gradually go away completely because the underlying causes are improved because the balancing of all the qi energies is taking place in the bodies. It's amazing, and I'd like you to consider trying it. We're going to have, maybe in a week or so, a limited supply of a pre-manufacturing batch that we're going to kind of make in our plant. But then for the really large quantities, they'll be about 5 weeks from now available in tablet form. We're making capsules. Capsules you have to take like twice as many of. So it can be kind of laborious taking a lot of capsules. Some people like capsules, though. We just are stuck making them because of the feasibility processes. It's easier for us to make capsules right now. In 5 weeks, it'll be available in tablets. You won't have to take nearly as many. It'll be just as effective, and will do an amazing job. How effective is it? Well, it lasts about 8 hours. If you have really bad pain for the first a week or so, you could probably take it every 6 hours. And after that, we don't think it's a good idea to take it quite to that level. Because it does last. Obviously, it lasts more than 8 hours. So you're getting a stronger amount if you take it every 6 hours. And it is extremely effective fairly quickly. For an analgesic-type response, it's fairly fast. I mean, you notice it like in 20 minutes to a half an hour, and it can grow from there in terms of its total effectiveness. And we're learning more and more about it as we use it, which is always the case. So it's great stuff. If you're interested in it, you can contact us. We'll put your name down. We'll let you know as soon as we get some that we can send to you. I think we're going to make capsules only available in one bottle size. The tablets will be available in two. But I believe the capsules right now are only going to come in one bottle size, which is 100 capsules to a bottle. And I think you're going to be amazed at its overall effectiveness. Now, again, what are we doing? We're using some of the principles that we teach in making this formula, all the formulas. And if this one goes on to be successful enough that people find it useful, we will then make more of the other formulas as well. So let me continue with understanding God's plan. And the formulas and herbs kind of fit into that because I believe that every disease is really a reaction to an imbalance in the life energy within a creature, people included. And God, in its plan, created a solution to every disease process that we can discover ourselves if we are virtuous enough. It's one of the gifts God gives us, because through our virtues we can discover the cures to what ails us. Because disease takes place as we turn away from God and become dark. And its plan, God's plan, is to remove disease from humans by humans becoming virtuous enough to first be able to treat the diseases they've already given themselves, and eventually cure and not get any more diseases by becoming enlightened enough that diseases will never become part of us. The diseases are the darkness itself. The only way, other way to keep yourself from being diseased is through power and taking energy from others as an evil being. Then you can ward off diseases that way. But that's a very, very bad process. And the end of that process is you're going to pay for it anyway. It may take a long time before you do, but when you do, there's a very long process getting out of evil. You eventually get out of evil. Nobody's condemned to hell for eternity. But they could be in a hellish nightmare for a long time, which to some people might seem like an eternity. So I don't want to fool you about that. That's entirely possible. It could be a very long time. God's plan is to have ultimate justice, not social justice. Social justice is the opposite of God's plan. Social justice means that you treat everybody in some way equally, not based upon meritorious actions, not based upon virtuous creations, but just because you're deciding to do that. Like, everybody deserves to be equal. If that were true, we would have a totally non-creative world, a non-godly world. So remember that part of the process. So God is seeking that there would be a system of justice, a system in which those that create the most and the most towards God and co-create with God receive the most for their benefits. You might say, well, that sounds like capitalism. Guess what? It is. But not capitalism in which those that receive don't continue to give to others through charity and through helpful measures to help others to become better givers. It doesn't ever relieve you of that. It becomes imperative. God's plan is that those that receive through meritorious and virtuous actions, those that receive and are helped by God, have to further become even more giving towards others so that they can better become giving themselves. That's the process. And if you include that process in capitalism, you don't have monopolies, you don't have greed, you don't have people doing crazy stuff. And you can say, well, what about the evil people? They could subvert the system. You said that corruption is part of it. Yeah, you don't allow corruption. Remember, part of God's plan is to fight evil. It's to prevent corruption. It's to stop people from abusing government systems or religion or anything that we create. If you don't include that in it, you can see why God's plan won't work. Just by using capitalism as a model, which is a pretty good economic model, it only works when those who participate in it are diligent and completely responsible, take a responsibility for any type of corruption to prevent it, destroy it, and prevent its abuse, particularly of the weaker and less, we'll say, virtuous people. Because that's who it goes after first. Those that are corrupt try to corrupt the weakest first, not the strongest. They're afraid of the strongest. They're afraid of those who seek to be one of God's warriors. And remember that God is all these things. God is love. God is peace. But not peace at the cost of corruption. Not peace at the cost of the destruction of justice. And not peace at the cost of substituting social justice, meaning that everybody's the same, so that there's no creativity, so that there's no freedom. That's nonsense. That's just another way of being evil. It's another sleight of hand. What happens if things do get out of hand, like they are in this country, in the United States, for those of you who are listening elsewhere? In the U.S., corruption has been a major part of our government, local to all the way to the national level, for almost since the inception of the country, certainly since the time the founders were no longer mostly in control of things. And so corruption is a very serious problem because it's been here for so long. How do we deal with this? How do we ensure that there's justice for all and liberty for all, and that people have the capability to be fully creative with their creator, to function in a virtuous way? How do you ensure this? Well, you do so through spiritual practice, through willful ungiving and unfolding to evil. Don't allow evil to recede from you. If it destroys you, so be it. But don't feed it. Don't let it grow. God's plan is to prevent that. God wants peace, but God is not a pacifist. There's a difference. Peace is the cooperation and sharing of groups of people working together and allowing those entities, including nations, to reach their maximum level of creation, co-creation, and light. That's what peace is. Peace is all those things. But when you don't have that, when you have dictators or people wanting to be dictators, when you have governments taking power from people and destroying people's lives, when you have court systems that act as corrupt racketeers, if you have these kinds of things going on, then you don't have peace. You have a violence against the will and the rights of humanity, which come from God. You're fighting God, and you don't even know it. Peace at any cost is evil. Peace at great cost is sometimes the only peace you can have on a planet such as Earth at this time. And many times to get to peace, there'll be enormous amounts of suffering and fighting in the physical world. Because evil in the physical world doesn't use just emotional persuasion or mental argument. It uses physical power. It will physically come in and restrain you. It will physically force you off or out of your house or property. It will kill you, if necessary, to get its way. First, it will try to frighten you. If that doesn't work, it has no problem with destroying the form you exist in. You don't die because you go on to live in the astral world, but you can no longer create in the physical world. And that's just fine with it. So let's not be pacifists, because if you are a pacifist, you're in illusion. And you're not seeing the nature of God. God is a warrior. And some religions have taken this too far. the sword of God, the punitive nature of God. Now, God isn't like that. That's putting our qualities onto God. God gives us the strength to be able to do what we need to do to fight off the physical demands against us by evil. That we can do. And it's legitimate. It's sometimes the only way you can deal with evil. You cannot teach it. You can't love it. Be like feeding a shark. Worse. Sharks are actually not evil. And you can't appease it. Okay, let's move away from that subject because I know it's a tough one for some people. Another part of God's plan is to ultimately have its creations become what it is. We see this in all the good parents in the human family, in the human kingdom. All the good parents want the same. They want their children to be as great or greater than they are. For God to want his creations to be greater than itself is difficult because it grows as his creation grows. So that would be a misstatement. But it certainly wants it to someday achieve the greatness of being God itself, which it gives to us that opportunity by putting no limits on our growth. So part of its plan is that it has a non-limited growth. You can grow to whatever level you seek, provided it is by creating more light in the universe around you. As long as you're willing to do that, there is never an end to growth. There is never an end to life. And from that same principle, there is immortality. Consciousness never dies. So in God's plan, anything that has enough consciousness to know that it is conscious and can be conscious of its creator can never die in consciousness. Because once it has achieved that result, it is entitled on its own to never lose it. It is a right given to us by our Creator in its own plan and can never be removed even by the Creator itself. Even the most evil of beings, they may go through a million years of incarnating through different species of lower life forms with some level of human-like consciousness, that they never, never are fully destroyed in consciousness. They destroy parts of their consciousness all the time. But they will never have that taken away from them. There's no such thing as absolute conscious death. There's only death of form. Forms go, come and go. And it's actually better sometimes because the forms degrade and you don't want to have the form anymore. You want to go on to a different form, like an astral body or a mental body. But regardless of whether the form exists or not, consciousness does not go away. Now, some people say, well, what about personality? You talk about personality. Yeah, personalities are subconscious. The parts of them that are conscious we call the self. The self never goes away. It becomes part of the soul. It is always in existence. The personalities part that are subconscious to the self, they go away. But since they're not conscious enough to suffer from the process of losing consciousness, they never suffer. They never suffer death because that part of the personality was never conscious enough to be alive. It worked like a machine. The parts of us that were always conscious enough to be recognizing of its own life goes on and continues to exist forever, even if we chose evil. We would suffer a lot, but we wouldn't lose consciousness. Now, what does this mean? Let's take a practical example of this. Some of you have heard me speak of this before, but I like practical examples. So, as we move towards our soul, we shed our bodies of illusion, they're called, which is the physical body and the electromagnetic part of it, which is sometimes referred to as the etheric body. That's the physical still, the physical world. It's just the part that we don't see very easily. And then there's the astral body. We die from the physical. We go on and live in the astral body much longer in their time perspective than we lived while we were physically alive. Eventually that body wears out. These bodies just don't last forever. And then we go on and live in the maniacic or mental body, but the lower mental body. And that body eventually wears out. The consciousness that has been building through the whole lifetime remains. It doesn't go away. And eventually that consciousness joins with the soul that helped create it in the first place. And it never goes away. It's just like tonight you go to sleep and you're John Doe. And tomorrow morning, you wake up, you still remember everything about yourself being John Doe that was good. You may not remember some of the things you did that were really terrible. They'll come back to you someday, but right now you remember most of the good things you've created. And that's a lot. So John Doe's still there. But now, you're John's soul. And John's soul is a great being with far greater consciousness. And you say, wow, I've always been this being. But while I was in this body doing these different bodies, doing all this stuff, some of them bad, some of them good, I forgot about who I really was. And now it's really neat because I remember it. Would you say that's a bad outcome to death? So I call that the grace of God. And let me cover that in more detail. God's plan is grace. What does that mean? That each time we've done something bad, we ultimately will pay for it at a future time. But in the immediate sense, we gain in consciousness as we leave that area of our misdeeds for another higher dimension of time and space, where we become more spiritual, we become more in God's thought. And eventually, we rejoin the soul that we left, making us fully in consciousness, that soul. And it's like a gift each time we die from a body. So there's grace. That means that God is allowing us something greater than we might deserve at that time. But the truth is, we deserve it because we made the sacrifice as a soul, and we come back to realizing that when we rejoin our soul. So the sacrifice of the soul creates the agreement with God. So we're not getting something for nothing, but at least while we're coming back, it feels that way to us. Our sense as a human being is that God has grace because even if we earned it by the great sacrifice we made to begin with, we've done many bad things, which we don't immediately pay for, and which we, when we do encounter them again in a future lifetime, we'll be better prepared for dealing with them, and we'll make up for it. It's a great system in which time and space are used by God to help us to overcome our weaknesses and to become something much greater, even before we might deserve it. That's part of God's plan. And it's in some religions. I'm glad it is. Even if it's not fully explained the way I explained it, I know they don't tell you all that stuff. But at least they put it in there. I mean, there's some part about it, you know. It's sort of like, well, they don't really explain it much. They don't really give us much help about what it's all about. But, okay, look it. Religions are only going to be as close to God as humanity that makes the religion is at that time. So you can't expect a religion to exceed what the humans that created the religion have about God. Do religions come from God? In some ways, if you listen to everything I said about God's plan, as much as people understand the plan, yes. But the rest of the religion comes from humans who have political motivations and power control issues and all kinds of factors, greed, that unfortunately influence them to do the wrong things. And that's unfortunate. That's terribly unfortunate. So we've covered some really interesting parts of God's plan tonight. I think this is one of the first shows I feel satisfied that I gave enough examples and covered enough of the subject so that I hope some of you are smiling right now saying, wow, this all kind of fits together and makes some sense. Some of you that have read Life's Hidden Meaning, the textbook I wrote, are probably saying, well, yeah, it's in there. It's a little easier now that you say it the way you said it. But, you know, this the whole purpose of what we're doing here is to get everybody closer to their Creator, to God, and to co-create with that Creator. Best, if you're really advanced in your consciousness, do it within a group of people because you won't be able to do it alone. But if you're not so advanced and you have a lot of troubles and your life is not where you think it should be, at least start with yourself and change yourself into a more virtuous person. You've got that opportunity. God gave it to you because it's part of God's plan. And you can discover God's plan by using your heart and crown chakra. Everything I've taught about tonight is self-realizable. The other chakra you're going to use is the sacral center. So you do some meditation about what I said. And then you observe these things in your own life and you test them. And you see if it's true. The truth comes to you through yourself, not through this radio station, but through you. You have to discover it for yourself, and it's the only way it's really going to stick. Hopefully you're going to do that. And let's see, I think I may have an announcement. I don't know if I do or not here. Let me see. I got stuff there all over the place. No, let me think. Okay, so let me just finish the show by mentioning to you again that if you are interested in trying the 5-Chi Jizik before we have a fully manufactured tablet available, and you're willing to take a few more capsules than you might have to the other way, then give us a call. You could try this number, 800-777-7850. Just say, hey, I want to get on the list of the 5-Chi Jizik next week, and we'll see if you can be one of the people trying out. And it works on all kinds of pains. You certainly have the opportunity to test it. It's guaranteed. If it doesn't work, even in the capsule form, which the capsule form is a little more difficult to take everything, but if it doesn't work, let us know. Get your money back. That's it. If it works, tell your friends and family. Let them know about it. And it can't be any easier than that. And it's not very expensive. I think the 100 capsule bottles are going to be like just under $40. And, you know, it's certainly more than a bottle of aspirin, but it's way, way, way better in pain relief and in helping your body to do better if you get into it and use it. And if you are in pain and it's affecting your service, try the 5-Chi Jizik. That's another thing. And how could pain affect service? Well, it could divert your attention onto yourself. That's not good. Theoretically, it shouldn't. But if it does, try 5-Chi Jizik. Okay, again, just encapsulating what I said tonight. Got one more minute here. God's plan has many different elements to it. The ones I covered tonight, the 6 or 7 or 8 or whatever, are only part of the plan. The plan is huge. It's way, way more than anything I ever talked about tonight. I'm giving you the basics Hopefully, by using those basics, you will be able to discover for yourself that, first of all, God exists. There is a plan that God has, and it is a great plan that helps everybody to live a more meaningful life for now and in the future. Hope all that makes sense. Well, this has been Niles McFlower, again, on our new two-hour time period, for Why Life Is, and hopefully you'll tune in and hear us next week.